Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What do you make of where the American League is at this point, Steve? Like, if the Yankees have come back to earth, Houston's still a very good team, clearly. But how scary is the American League for any team that happens to get in?
Yeah, look, I think the American League, you know, Houston's really good because their starting pitching is so good. You know, the Yankees, you know, that's some part for me has been their vulnerability. They pitch better than I thought they had a right to expect them to, but it seems like maybe that's leveling off. Severino's on the injured list on the 60-day IL. You guys mentioned Montas didn't throw all that well. Then, you know, Tyone does not scare me in a playoff game at all, Jameson Tyone. And Nestor Cortez, look, he's been great, but I'll take a right-hand dominant lineup against him and feel like I've got a chance. And plus, he's not quite as sharp now as he was early. His innings workload is hitting him a little bit. And Garrett Cole has not had very good starts his last couple times out. And so, you know, I think that you know, there's some vulnerability. Plus, their bullpen has taken some major losses right now. Now, they've had other guys who have stepped up and been pretty productive, but none of them have been big-time playoff pitchers either. And so, well, there's a vulnerability there. Now, it's a 9.5-game lead. Is there time to make up 9.5 games? For the Jays, they'd have to keep playing really good baseball, and they're going to need a collapse from the Yankees. But it can happen because the Yankees, you know, they've lost 5 in a row. They do have starting pitching woes. The more you do that, the more you expose your bullpen, and it can lead to more issues overall. So there's potentially, you know, an opportunity there. You know, the Blue Jays, and for them, if they could just get within 6 games, then what happens is you focus on chasing somebody instead of worrying about who's chasing you. That perspective, that change in the direction in which you're looking as a team is a significant thing, right? Nothing worse than looking over your shoulders because all you do is think about, well, what if we lose? You know, what happens? Who's closing in on us? Instead of, boy, if we win, we can catch the Yankees. And I think that that's where they've got to maintain a focus. And so, you know, they're not quite at that point yet where they can taste it. But, you know, they get another, you know, they win the next 3, the Yankees lose the next 3, and now you're starting to feel like something, you know, interesting can happen.
Well, I got to believe the Baltimore Orioles are now ecstatic about the way the schedule worked out in terms of them, you know, chasing the Jays. The Yankees are a different story. But because of COVID, because of certain delays, and just the way that the schedule worked out, the Jays in Baltimore will play 15 times the rest of the way. 15 of the final 58 are Baltimore-Toronto. How significant could this end up being, Steve?
Well, it could be significant, but I personally believe that the Orioles, at some point, the bubble's going to burst. The balloon's going to burst. And so I think there's a real chance that, you know, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. I think it could turn out that the Blue Jays play the Orioles at just the right time because they're due to fall apart a bit. They're not this good. And so, you know, so I honestly look at it as an opportunity for the Jays, not a disadvantage that they've got them. And I don't look at it. I mean, sure, I can understand why the Orioles might look at that as an advantage, but I think that they're way over their skis for the talent they have on the roster. And it's a great story, and I love that they're doing great. But it will come back down to earth.
So, Steve, some injury concerns with the Blue Jays. Obviously, George Springer would be first on that list, the troublesome elbow injury. If you're looking at that as a GM, what do you see in there, and how much are you concerned that this is going to be something that lingers until the end of the season and perhaps through the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it. You know, I was surprised they didn't right away put him on the injured list. I think that this is something when one, he couldn't throw, and then two, where it affected him when he was swinging or even just on the follow-through on a swing, that was concerning to me. So I think it's the right thing to put him on the injured list. They've got to settle it down. I'll be surprised if they get a lot of outfield play from him from the rest of the year. It sort of feels to me like, you know, they're destined for him to be a DH. And thankfully, they did the right thing at the deadline. And, you know, things sort of got to be fluid. And so they found themselves, Merrifield looking place in center field, which I think was really important. So, look, they were going to have to get a DH if Springer was able to play. So the fact that instead that the guy that might be a DH is going to have to play center field and Springer is in a position to have to DH is not the end of the world.
Steve, speaking of Merrifield, like, how nice of a fit has he been on this team? Because it seems like he plays the way that Schneider wants his teams to play. Like, he's got a lot of energy. He's very aggressive. You know, what have you seen from him since he's joined the Jays?
Yeah, I think that you know, I did a breakdown of what he was as a player. Like, he's an old-school guy. He's a dirt ball guy. He's a speed guy. And we saw in Sunday all of that come into play. I mean, the tagging up from second to third and the throw from Buxton, where he just beat the throw, and then obviously the play at the plate for the go-ahead run. And so he has been, you know, he is, and I really do think the change of scenery, he was so due to get out of Kansas City. I just, you know, there's only so long you can take, you know, being the leader of a team that's getting their head beat in. And I think being able to get a fresh start on a team that has hopes and aspirations where he's invigorated by some of the young guys on the roster, I think is huge for the Jays. And I think it's going to make a big difference for Merrifield as well.
Where do you stand on the play at the plate in the 10th yesterday?
So I think the umpire in New York got it 100% right, that the rule states that if the catcher is not in possession of the baseball, he is not allowed to block the plate. And Sanchez was standing in front of the plate when he didn't have the baseball and was blocking it. Now, I think the interpretation in New York was proper. I think the rule needs to be adjusted, though, and it should be adjusted in a way that says that if the throw takes the catcher into the baseline, where in order to catch it, he has to be in a position in front of the plate, that he should be allowed to do that. Now the other thing, remember, Merrifield could have lowered his shoulder and Pete rosed him in that moment. I mean, the rule doesn't say you can't have a collision. The rule says you can't go out of your way to have a collision. And so I think that you know, in that case, you know, Merrifield could have run him over. But I think that you know, so I think the umpire's got it right. I would tweak the rule because both that play and then the play in the Pirates-Orioles game yesterday, the throw took the catcher into the front of the plate, and, you know, he had to catch it. And what the rule is, they're making it seem like that the catcher's got to make, like, a wide receiver on the sideline trying to make a catch and then make a tag to avoid, you know, blocking the plate. And I don't think that that's fair to the catcher. So I think it's one of those things they should tweak, but I think the umpire's got it right.
Steve, we were having this conversation before you came on the air, and my co-host, you know, Brian Hayes here, who often rails against the vagaries of instant replay, was saying, you know, the moment was stolen there. It was a great moment. Tough call. It's a subjective call. Do we really need to be handing over subjective calls to video replay given the excitement of that particular play in baseball?
Yes, we do. Because the bottom line is the excitement is secondary to the right call being made. I mean, I'd rather – so here's the thing. If I am the Blue Jays, do I want to lose that game because the umpire made the wrong call? It'd be just because it's more exciting that they gunned down the runner to play? No. And the way I look at it is if the right call is made and it costs me a game, I'm honestly willing to live with that as long as that I know that when the call's wrong, that it could be reversed to help me win a game. I just want whatever happens on the field to be the true play. And so I still am all in favor of instant replay and far more in favor of getting calls right than the excitement of the moment being stolen away.
Yeah, we've had this argument so many times, you and I, Steve. You know where I stand on it. I understand where you're coming from as a GM, but if I'm coming at it as the commissioner, and it is entertainment. That's what it is. It's about, this is an entertainment business. You are asking people to spend money and time. They don't want moments like that stolen because the 30 GMs live and die by every pitch. It's not good for business. It's not. There's not enough action in the game. We yell and scream all the time. It's home runs and strikeouts. Finally, action. A play at the plate. There is maybe no greater entertaining moment in pro sports, period. Football, hockey, baseball, basketball, play at the plate in the 10th inning, and you cannot give an emotion. You have to stop, wait for people in New York to tell you how you can feel about it. It's awful for business. Awful.
Yeah, although it turned into a great temper tantrum.
It did.
We got the excitement.
Human element.
We got the excitement. We did. I mean, honestly, and then the post game, that was even better. And
yes,
for us in talk radio, we've gotten a whole day's worth of fodder out of it. So Come on, man. Be careful what you wish for. What are we going to talk about if they take this stuff away from us?
Yeah, I do love a good meltdown. Rocco Baldelli, man. He went old school on that one. I mean, how would you grade his meltdown?
He was outrageous. I mean, you know, but the thing is, he went too far when he said that, you know, it's the worst call ever. Like, Armando Galarraga would beg to differ,
right?
With the near perfect game they lost, and Jeffrey Mayer and the catch he made in the outfield where the umpires, you know, they made the call that it wasn't interference. I mean, there have been a lot more egregious calls than that. And he said, you know, both teams are upset by this. I'm thinking, yeah, I don't think really that the Blue Jays are too upset by the outcome of this. So, you know, he knows that his team is not running away with the Central, and that they're going to have to fight their way in, and the White Sox haven't made a run yet, and there's some vulnerability there. So he knows that one game could make a huge difference for his team.
If you were Ross Atkins, would you have any reason to believe, or should you have any reason to believe, that either Nate Pearson or Julian Merriweather can help you down the stretch?
No, I don't think you can plan for that at all. I think that that is just icing on the cake if you get it. But I think that what I would be doing, you know, one thing you can do is you can make minor league trades. So I would have scouts looking for the best left-handed reliever in the minor leagues right now and make whatever deal I can do to get him. And I might do a couple of them and just bring him into AAA and then take a look and see if I can find a way to bring him up to my club. But I, you know, with Mays' injury, I really am shopping right now to try to find that guy. I really want to try to find some help in the bullpen. And I want somebody who's pitching rather than hoping somebody's going to come back from an injury.
Steve, do you foresee a situation like in the next games coming up where Mays is going to be out, where the Jays are going to get burnt by not having a lefty in the bullpen?
It can happen. I mean, it's possible. And, you know, I know Jake McGee's out there, but he got released from the Giants, he got released from the Brewers, two other teams that were looking for left-handed bullpen help, and they both, you know, tried him out and he couldn't get anybody out. So I think it's wishful thinking that he's going to dramatically change for them. But, you know, they have right-handers that can get left-handers out. I just like having a left-hander to force the other team to burn some of their bench, you know, to be able to, you know, bring in the left-hander. They've got to go to the bench, burn the right-handed hitter to bring him in. And you know, even if it's in the sixth or seventh inning, so that by the time later in the game, the matchup might be better served where you're bringing a right-hander in, they've already burned, you know, the hitter and taken him out of the game. And so, you know, it's not an ideal situation. They do have right-handers who can be effective, but that's what teams that don't have a left-hander say. Oh, but we've got right-handers who can get left-handers out, so we're okay. We're not bothered by it too much. I always wanted three left-handers in my bullpen. I wanted to cause the opposing team to start to flip their lineup around as early as the sixth inning. If my starter's coming out at 5 1/3, I wanted a left-hander to come in right there if he's a right-handed starter and get the other team. Let him burn a guy in the sixth inning. And then, you know, then I can bring in a right-hander. Then I can bring in another left-hander. Let him burn another guy in the eighth inning. So that, you know, they're going through their bench earlier and trying to work the matchups. So I always wanted that sort of depth and balance. But, you know, I mean, the best laid plans, it doesn't always work that way. I would have thought that a guy like Andrew Chapin, Gregory Soto, guys like that from the Tigers might have been targets. You know, Jake Diekman went from the Red Sox to the White Sox. But I would have thought that maybe they could have found a left-handed reliever out there in the market. But I got to tell you, there weren't as many relievers traded this year as I've seen in the past.
Who do you think sent a bigger message this weekend, the Mets to the Braves or the Dodgers to the Padres?
I think the Mets to the Braves. I do. I think there's more vulnerability there. I mean, the Braves have played the best since June 1st, I think that, you know, the Braves, going back to my days, have always had the Mets number, and so I think it was a huge statement. Plus, you know, it took their lead to 6.5, where now I think, 15.5 for the Dodgers over the Padres. The Padres are 2-8 this year against the Dodgers. They've not played very well. Now, Manny Machado's response to that was great, though. He's like, yeah, I don't care. It's just a regular season game. And they said, well, are you concerned? He said, no, I'm not concerned. They said, why aren't you concerned? He said, because I'm bleeping Manny Machado. Like, I thought, that's the greatest thing ever. The most confidence I've ever heard. Like, I wish I could be like that. Why are you not concerned? Because I'm bleeping Speed Phillips. That's why. I mean, Manny Machado, I'm like he's my hero now for that. It was amazing.
That is a great comment. And I'm not sure if the owner feels the same way right now in San Diego, but I like it. I like the swag. All right, Steve, great catching up with you, buddy. We'll do it later in the week.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota. And check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com.